Beyond saying thank you for stopping by with us here at the Classical Station. For an artist who's now in demand across a wide range of platforms, studio recording, live performance, television, multimedia, how does your preparation change as a performer depending upon the medium that you're working in? Or is it all the same?
On the one hand, of course, it's the same, just in the sense that I don't think my standards change. Once you move out of what I might consider to be like my normal comfort zone, which would be the standard chamber music recital or concerto repertoire, then there's going to be extra angst and therefore more preparation. Something that comes to mind immediately is when I had to play with Conspirare on their PBS special, and one of the things we did was Gabriel's Oboe, which is not that hard a piece to play. But I'm thinking to myself that this is going to be on national television, and I've got one shot. Right at first rehearsal, I noticed that they were getting ready to do it all from memory. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I've got to do the same. It does definitely vary from event to event what kind of preparation goes into it. I recently did a U.S. premiere of a piano trio by John Novacek. John's a dear old friend of mine. Part of his background comes from rags, therefore the kind of jazz idiom. A lot of his music is like that. I am not good with that. I wish I were, because when I was in college, for example, I just was obsessed with jazz and I went to sleep with it every night listening to jazz. So when I prepared for this premiere of this piano trio, I immediately recognized, oh, this is jazz. I spent so many hours preparing for it. I still at that first rehearsal was like very uneasy about it. It came off, and it's there now for everyone to see on YouTube if they want to see for themselves whether or not it came off well.
Being an artist, and especially a classical musician, is a very solitary approach, no matter how you look at it. How does now interfacing with the public or the press affect not just how you prepare, but how you think about being an artist? Because when you become a public figure in demand, they want to see a certain side of you that's not the same side as being in a practice room for 6 or 8 or 4 or 2 hours a day. Has that changed the way you think about being a cello player?
I don't think it has. You know, I've been teaching at UT for 21 years. I talk about this a lot with my students, that I'm always, from the very moment that I start learning a piece, I'm always thinking about the other side. What do I want to say to my audience? How am I going to say it? And that's how you have to practice. It's always about that performance and reaching somebody on the other side. I don't think that's really changed. And I also say to my students, you have to figure out who you are as an artist and just be true to yourself. And maybe your tastes change. Certainly my tastes have changed over the years. I envy Yo-Yo, and what has he done like 5 recordings of the Box Suites now? I would love to do that, because I don't hear it just one way. And certainly my views on things are constantly changing. And I have to say too that a lot of that is as a result of working with a new set of students every year.
How do you balance your time as a performer, teacher, and father?
For me, that's like the eternal struggle, is finding that right balance of especially family and work. And I always feel like I'm not spending enough time with family. That extends to my students, because to me, my students are like my family. There, at least, you know, it's a little easier that I can just say, okay, I'm never going to be away more than a week at a time. Thankfully, most of my trips, concerts are generally on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And so you can squeeze the travel towards the end of the week and maybe squeeze some teaching in the beginning of the week. My travel schedule is completely dependent upon my teaching schedule. I do make it a point to be there for my students.
Some artists and performers are drawn to teaching and some are not. For you, what's the special appeal of working with students there at UT?
You think you've answered every question there is to answer with a piece, and then lo and behold, a student comes in and brings a fresh perspective. I think it keeps me young, certainly in a sense. I love working with students on that process of discovery. Right. And I tell my students that my role is to help you on a path of self-discovery. And of course, there's an immense feeling of satisfaction of, you know, when you see the progress. But on top of that, I find that it makes me a better, not only a musician, but a player as well. I mean, certainly I feel like even though I have far less time now than I did 30, 40 years ago to practice, I feel like I'm a much better player.
Zooming in a little bit on your recent recording history, this is the second major recording with Scott Yu and the Royal Scottish Orchestra. Mm-hmm. What was it about that relationship that made you want to return to this setup?
The Tchaikovsky originally was going to be on the same disc as the first pairing, the Dvorak and Ionescu, but it wouldn't fit. It's more than 75 minutes of music. That was my miscalculation. I did have the idea that I wanted to go back anyway, because I really enjoyed Scott Lennon and I really enjoyed working with that orchestra. So it was just a natural fit.
The Schumann is a very special work. Can you zoom in into the concept and the presentation of your new recording?
A big part of it is my association of that piece. And one of the strongest ones is my dad. Growing up, he not only was that one of his favorite pieces, but he had always said to me from when I was very young, he said, when you get older, I want you to enter the Tchaikovsky competition. It's like, okay, Dad, I will. And I eventually did. And so there's that very strong association coupled with the fact that my dad, despite not being a musician, always wanted to be a singer. There was that natural progression to think, well, what can I pair with the Tchaikovsky that might have to do with singing? So Schumann came to mind. When I decided the Schumann, well, I figured, well, that really is the heftier piece. That, why doesn't that actually end up being the centerpiece of the album? So then I had this idea of flanking it with two pieces of Tchaikovsky. And so I thought, well, Andante Cantabile would be perfect. Sticking with that mirror image idea, then to start with the Casals and then do a different version to end the album. That's the genesis of it.
Beyond saying, I thank you so much for the time that you've taken to talk to us at the Classical Station. And I know my listeners are grateful as well.
Thank you, Caleb. Nice to talk to you.